leadership at all levels, now in its ninth year. Our host is Gail Launia-Lawson, president and founder of Leadership at All Levels, an inspirational and educational professional development company. As a professional keynote speaker, author, and business development executive, Gail's career journey has focused on building decades of corporate and personal relationships through leadership, gratitude, and positivity. As an adjunct professor at the University of Rhode Island, Salve Regina University, and Western Connecticut State University, Gail appreciates the opportunity to share business acumen and optimistic views on life with her students. Gail also served as a director on several nonprofit boards, including the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Newport Hospital Foundation and Newport County Chamber of Commerce. She's the author of Your Someday Is Now, What Are You Waiting For? 100% of the book sales benefit nonprofit organizations, and to date, over $50,000 has been donated to nonprofits organizations. And we welcome again Gail Olofsson. Always good to see you.
Well, always good to see you, even on this rainy day. And I have the question of questions for you this morning.
Yes.
In all the years, in all the decades we've known each other,
yes,
I've never asked you this.
Ask me anything.
What do you think of when you hear the word sales?
Sales. Three words.
Oh.
Actually, three letters.
Okay.
ABC. Always be closing. Always be closing.
And my second question is, do you enjoy meeting with salespeople?
Do I enjoy? Well, I'm meeting with one now.
Well, yes, I know, but I'm not trying to sell you something. You're meeting with two now.
I'm meeting with two now. The two just walked out of here. So I'm always meeting with salespeople, and I enjoy chatting with them and talking with them.
Well, you are in the minority. Our guest today is Alan Langer, who wrote a best-selling book called The 7 Secrets to Selling More by Selling Less.
Uh-huh.
And a few years ago, he did an experiment. He asked 231 people every day for 3 weeks whether they enjoyed or looked forward to speaking or meeting with a salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
So if I asked you that question, just like that, verbatim, do you look forward to speaking to and meeting with a salesperson? What are you going to answer?
Depends.
Okay, that's good too. So are you ready for this?
Go right ahead.
100%, all 231 answered no.
I can believe that.
Answered no. Now, I'm like you. I love meeting with salespeople. And today, Alan Langer, who I met through the National Speakers Association New England, and absolutely thought, wow, what a wonderful person. What an amazing guy. What a non-salesy salesperson. What an organic, authentic salesperson. And Alan is a professional speaker, a best-selling author, an award-winning sales professional with over 27 years experience. He has collectively sold $95 million of product in his career.
I can believe that.
I have sold under $50 million, so I'm like super impressed with $95
I've sold about
million.
$1.98 myself.
I think so. You went up to $1.99 after this morning.
Last year was a good year.
Okay. He has trained hundreds of sales consultants, including recently the Discover Newport teams, many of the local hotel teams welcomed Alan to teach for them.
Excellent.
Dozens of companies, et cetera, et cetera. But this bio, I could go on forever. In fact, his bio is pretty concise because he's not all about himself. Alan is all about helping other people become their best you. And I knew that from the first person we met. I knew it by his LinkedIn message to me. I knew it by the interaction the first day we had a meeting.
Well,
so
thank you.
I'm pontifying you right now, making you very papal.
I forgot to wear my hat.
I know. It's so good to see you in person.
You too, Gail.
Introduce you to Bruce.
Bruce, great
to be
here.
We go way back at least 10 minutes.
Yeah, yes. But I don't know as much as I want to about your career path,
mm-hmm.
And how you got to where you are now. So what is your career path? I was going to say your earliest recollection of sales, but that'll be later.
Yeah, no, it's actually in my book how I got into sales, because my first 15 years of being a professional, I worked in college athletics, marketing, and fundraising.
Okay.
I worked for Montclair State University, and then I worked for Columbia in New York City, Ivy League. And my whole goal was I wanted to be an athletic director. That's what I wanted to be. And then after watching the athletic director at Columbia, who is an amazing man, rest his soul, he was still working. He was 70 something years old. He was still working 80 hours a week, you know, sitting there Wednesday night in a freezing rainy day with four people watching the field hockey team because he was supporting them. That's what athletic directors do.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, I just started really like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore, but I was lost. I spent 15 years being like a really top athletic professional. And I was in charge of fundraising. I was raising money for Columbia. Like I was raising $5-6 million a year.
Did people want to give you the money? Were they excited about it?
Yeah, but it's all an ego thing with okay. fundraising. It really is. It's like, you know, where can I put my name and what am I going to get for my, it was very seldom to help the university. It was more, where can I get my name so I can feel better about myself? Like there was a particular father who wanted to build a particular stadium. I won't name anything, but he was not going to spend the money on the stadium unless the stadium was called named after him.
Did it happen?
No, it did not happen.
Okay, wow.
But anyway, so one night I went to dinner with my best friend. I used to live in New Jersey at the time, and I was just I was like, what am I going to do with my life? And he used to sell advertising for a local minor league baseball team, and he's eating, and I said, I don't know what to do, and he goes, well, why don't you get into sales? And I said to him, sales? Who the hell wants to be a salesman?
Yes.
Because that's
yes.
the perception out there. And I don't want to be in sales. And
but were a salesperson. Well, that's doing when
he stopped eating. He said, dude, you're in sales now. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, don't you ask alums for money every day? Don't you try to get stories in newspapers? I was in charge of season tickets. Like all of these things. And it never occurred to me that I was in sales. He goes, man, if you actually got paid for being in sales, you would probably kill it.
Right.
And the next morning, this is not not good business advice, folks. I went in and I quit. Without another job.
Okay, that's like
that's how
rule number one, no.
Rule number one, no. That's how desperate I was to get out of there. And I gave him a month's notice, so I had time. And I went into this, I was like, what sales jobs can I get? And this local company, I'll never forget his name, is Mark Swanson, great guy. He sold sunrooms.
Okay.
Him and his wife, and he had one salesperson, and he took a flyer on me. I had no sales experience, and he sent me up to Buffalo, New York to learn how to sell sunrooms, and that was my selling career.
How was it?
I did pretty good, but that's where I learned that the corporate sales process is broken.
Mm.
See, corporate sales training is really product training. It's not sales training. So I was up there for 7 days, and the first 6.5 days was I learned everything about. I can still tell you how long the screws are and how thick the roofs are, but they didn't tell you how to sell it. They just told you how to present the product. So that was my first experience, but I still did pretty well.
When I was in college and I was graduating from college with a degree in political science. Well, it's political science, international relations. I was starting a new major right there, political relations.
Yeah.
Maybe we need that. We probably need that right now. But I remember interviewing with some of my dad's friends, informational interviews at different companies down in the Stanford, Connecticut area, New York City area. And one of them said, you need to be in public relations and sales. And I was so offended. I walked out of that company. It was actually called American Can, Sal Guadich, who was the vice president of HR, and I walked out so offended by that.
Yeah.
Because my dad was is an orthodontist, and when the sales reps came in, they didn't make appointments, they had egg on their tie,
mm-hmm.
and they'd come in, hello, doctor, just talking about their products instead of listening to his needs.
Right.
So I was so turned off by sales, not realizing I had been selling my whole life in a teddy bear store, in the ice cream store, those things. So I get it. But you were in big time sales and did that never register.
Never registered that I was in sales.
And you weren't commissioned.
No commission.
Oh my gosh.
It's Leadership at All Levels with Gail Lownia-Lofson. We're broadcasting from Innovate Newport today.
Oh, I love Innovate Newport.
Me too.
It's a very cool spot I've never been here before.
You talk about a place that does not need to be sold.
For sure.
You know, it's just it's just so, Kevin runs it so beautifully.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. So we are talking about sales today, and a lot of times when people talk about sales and marketing, because they do go hand in hand, mm-hmm. very much so, people cringe with the word sales.
Mm-hmm.
They think of, I'm not even going to name stores because I'm friends with everyone, but when people just attack you and come in,
mm-hmm.
I am going to reference Newport Restaurants Group's Food Love Market, because it just came to my head that the reason I love going in there and getting coffee is because of Tina. That's why.
There you go. Right.
And I know you have a coffee shop story as well.
Yes.
I love Jeff, the manager, and how nice he treats everyone. But Tina gives you this great big smile. She knows that I like steam milk. She starts steaming it right away. And there's the cinnamon out and everything. It's wonderful. So I would love to continue more about your sales path, because we started with university college athletics, mm-hmm. then moved to the sunrooms where you knew nothing about sales, but you could tell me how long those nails were.
Yes, I finished first in the class, and I could still tell you the 3-inch stainless steel nails and the R value of the roof and the rollers on the doors to this day, because they ingrained it in you, but they never showed you how to sell those.
How did you learn then? How did you learn how to sell?
I guess I'm a student of always trying to improve. Like I'm just always thinking of. So I would go in and like the national sales average. So the name of the company was Better Living Sunrooms. I'm not really sure if they're even around anymore. But their national sales average was like 20% closing, okay. Which is horrific. Like 20 for those in the audience who don't know what closing percentage is. It's the amount of people that say yes versus the amount of people mm-hmm. that you see. So if you see 10 people and 2 say yes, that's a 20% closing percentage. Look at it the other way, that's 8 people who tell you no, which is, again, horrific. So I had a 20% closing rate. That they trained me to have a 20% closing rate, and that was okay with them, which was mind-boggling. And I'm like, this is not okay. Like, I felt terrible with 8 out of 10 people telling me no. And I started to think about, people don't want to listen about, like, I'm sitting here with an older couple in their mm-hmm. 60s, and they want a nice sunroom. They could care less about the screws and the rollers and the glass.
100%.
And one day I went in, and I said, they made you bring in the bags, and you had to bring in, like, the suitcases and everything. I just walked in with my clipboard. I asked them what they were looking for, and they said, they had this nice deck, want to put a sunroom on the deck. And I stood back there with them, it was a beautiful morning, and I said, imagine what it would be like to sit out here on a beautiful snowy December day with a cup of coffee, watching the deer walk through your yard.
Oh my gosh.
They bought the sunroom like 15 minutes later. I didn't show them anything.
What made you do that? What
I don't know. It just dawned on me, like, that's when I realized that selling is emotional. And of course, there's a lot of books in about that, but I kind of figured that out on my own. And from that day on, I sold on emotion. Yeah. And then when I got the engineer and the architect, I would bring the stuff in because they wanted to see it.
Yes.
But most of the time, they wanted to see pictures and know what their sunroom was going to feel like. So one of the biggest things I train...
You want to come build one at my house now?
One of the things I train is put your customer in the position of knowing what it feels like to own your product or service.
Yes.
Don't talk about mm-hmm. your product or service. What does it feel like to own it? And that's what's going to make you sell.
No, it's wonderful. So you're at sunrooms.
Yes.
And boy, to learn that before all the books were out on emotional selling,
getting
to the heartstrings.
This was year.
That,
this was
it just
20,
came
20
through
years
you.
Ago. Yeah.
It just came through
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
So now you're at the sunroom. When did you know it was time to leave?
So the only other sales rep they had, he didn't like me because I started beating him.
Okay.
So there's friction, and he kind of made it uncomfortable there. And then I got an offer to be a business development person for a general contractor.
Okay, excellent.
So that gave me, because this was commission only, this job.
Okay.
This sunroom job. So then I go to this job, which had a salary and commission. Turns out a year and a half later, I sold jobs and he never paid me commission. So
that's a wake-up call.
That was a wake-up mm-hmm. call. From there, I ended up at Home Depot, selling windows, siding, roofing, all of their in-home service stuff.
And they loved you.
I was the rookie of the year the first year I was there. Then that's where I met Paul, who I mentioned to you when we were having our pre-conference. Paul was the regional sales manager there. Got rookie of the year. He was then hired by Renewal by Anderson to start the dealership in Rhode Island, and he hired me as his first sales rep. He pulled me from and it was a risk for me because I was making some really good money now at Home Depot. I had a new baby. She was just born. But he pulled me over. He talked me into it because you can make more money here. And that was, at this point, 18, 19 years ago. That dealership now has 88 sales reps in it. You deal with them. I was the first one they hired.
Yes, we love dealing with that renewal by Anderson at the Newport International Boat Show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's renewal, not renewals.
Right.
And it's Anderson with an E.
Right, the Swedish
version.
Right.
I had that right up on my board, so I would always get the spelling right.
Yeah. Just, so the first
that's
year.
That's important, too. Here,
yeah, so here's the growth. The first year we did, he hired two other people, and we did $3 million. We sold $1 million each, basically. Okay. And when I left in 2021, they were selling $150 million a year. They went from $3 million to $150 million in about a 13-year span.
You loved what you were doing. You had your family. Why did you leave?
Here's what I love. I love selling. Will always love selling. Love meeting people. Love going into homes. I was in over 10,000 homes in my career. And what I didn't love was saying, okay, Gail, thank you for your order, and then passing it over and having no control over it. I always said, if I could drive to Minnesota, manufacture the windows, drive back, install them for you, like sell them, make them, and install them, that would have been a happy camper. But because I had to hand it over to someone else, 80% of the jobs went great, 85% of the jobs went great. The 15% that didn't, because it wasn't my fault, manufacturing issue, ordering issue, installation issue, whatever, it's humans, it's construction. I was the one taking the brunt of it. And the customer doesn't care who caused the issue. They just want it fixed.
Yeah.
And if I'm not in control of getting it fixed, it was very frustrating for me.
The customer doesn't care who caused the issue.
Never.
Is that one of your seven secrets?
It's not one of my seven secrets, but
it's going to be the eighth
it should
secret.
Be. It should be. It might be in my second book, yes.
That's so important. And I always, I'll go back to just the restaurant analogy. The customer doesn't want to hear that the chef overcooked the fish. And you also don't want to throw the fish under the fish.
The chef
under the broiler.
The fish is already under the broiler.
Yeah, it is. So I'm so distracted today because you are so good in sales. I'm not distracted today the whole day, just the past 5 minutes. And you're saying that you don't sell anymore and you still sell because you are championing a whole new generation of people who are going to sell, hopefully knock wood, and I'm knocking it, the right way.
Well, that's my business card says, changing the world of sales one team at a time.
Right. So you're having this situation. There's no way with a dealership like Renewal by Anderson that they're going to let you book it, cook it, serve it.
No, exactly.
They're not going to do that. And that's understandable.
Yeah, of course.
But you're getting that 10, 15% of unhappy people.
Yes.
So why are you leaving? Why do you leave when you don't have another job?
Because I realized, I was selling now at that point for 20-something years.
Okay.
So you start to think of what's your next chapter. Because I was getting a little tired of running 15 appointments a week, driving all over the place. I was driving 40,000 miles a year.
Yeah.
So it was a lot. I wrote the book. The book came out. And I wrote the book because I love to write. I had no other motivation to write the book except I wanted to write the book.
Okay.
And when I finished the book, I actually cried because it was just one of my biggest goals in life was to write a book. What I didn't expect was the book to become a bestseller. It did really well. Thank you. It did really well on Amazon. And then I start getting contacted from Chamber of Commerce people, Rotary people. Can you give a talk?
Yes.
I'm like, oh, sure. I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
Now, I had done training for Anderson. They would always ask me to get up to the front of the room. What are you doing to close at 70%? And I would teach the guys. But it wasn't anything I thought about. It just was natural for me. So then I start giving these talks, and there's when the light bulb came on. One of the talks I gave at the Warwick Rotary, two people came up to me, business owners, and said, can you train my team?
Okay.
And I said, oh, wow.
Yes.
Yes, I could. I didn't know what I was doing, but yeah, I've been doing this enough. And that kind of started me like, I really like this. I want to do this. And I did it I sold windows and did this. I built my business for 2 years. And finally, December of 2021, just dove in head first.
Dove in, and was it scary?
Very scary.
Yeah.
Mortgage, kids, car payments, everything. And I was making a lot of money at Renewal by Anderson and great company.
And you loved it. You loved the people. You loved your
I loved it. I was getting tired of it, of the same thing every single day. Now, today, I tell people I never feel like I'm working.
No, me neither.
Never feel like I'm working.
No, even with sponsorship sales and speaking and training and teaching at the university, I don't feel like I'm working.
Yep.
It's all life. And Richard Branson has a talk about, he has an expression about that work is life, is like life is work, and it's all living.
Yeah.
There are not a lot of people to that feel the same way you and I do.
Yeah.
And
when I say that, people are like, oh my God, I wish I felt that way.
I know, but like they can. Right. It can also be reframing in their head, especially if they're in sales. Because I love where another way that you open your book is having people consider the following. And this is really important. Do I love my job? Would I like to make more money? Would I like to improve my selling game? Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. To you too, and me.
Yeah.
We love our jobs. We want to make more money. And we want to improve our selling. Don't you want to improve every day?
Yeah.
So that is important. Then I love this one. If so, how do I measure improvement? I can guarantee you people do not stop to measure their own personal improvement.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you measure yours? What do you base it on?
It's based on... So I always set my... I rewrite my goals every week.
Okay.
My monthly goals, my quarterly goals, and my annual goals.
You rewrite them every week?
Yeah, I have a whole... What's that?
Which day of the week?
Sunday nights I do it.
You rewrite your goals?
Every single week, yeah.
I've never heard of this, and I love this.
I'll send you my PDF. I have a PDF.
Please.
It shows you how to do it. So it has your weekly to-do list at the bottom, and then it funnels into your monthly, your quarterly, and then your annual.
You designed this?
I designed it. Yeah, I have it on my website as a lead generator, but I've probably given hundreds of away.
Wow.
It's pretty
wonderful.
Cool. Yeah. I'll show it to you. It's in my bag behind me.
Okay. All right.
So I define my success probably in two ways. One, am I hitting my goals, but I also want to make sure that I'm happy doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned really only the last 2 years that if something feels wrong, I follow my gut. I've turned down clients quite often recently because the client felt wrong and I knew I wouldn't be happy serving that client. We didn't align with our philosophies. For example, this is a quick but great story. There was a company that sold leaf protection. They were in, I don't know where they were, Minnesota or something like that. And they wanted to bring me in to do some sales training. So I always interview the client. And I said, you know, what's your process like and everything? And this guy's name was Jeremy, the sales manager.
Yes.
And he said, this is what we do, blah, blah, blah. We do this. And it was very canned, like, you know, following the corporate process. And then he goes, but then if they give it some Jeremy juice, they get extra commission.
What the heck is Jeremy juice?
And I said, Jeremy juice? I mean, his name is Jeremy. I said, what's that? He says, if they have to sell the job at $5,000, for example, to make full commission and the company makes their money, if they sell it for $6,000, that's a Jeremy juice and I give them half of that. So basically, if you rip off the customer another $1,000, you get to split that with the company.
Oh, geez, sign me up.
That was
this
their
is
sales.
Terrible.
That was their sales process.
Terrible.
And they wanted to pay me like $15,000 to come in and do training. I said no. There's no way I'm coming in. I can't help your company.
No.
If that's you, is that what you're training? Can't help you.
Absolutely not. Boy, that is so different from when you worked for Matt at Renewal by Anderson.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he had so much respect for you, and you had respect for him.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the book.
Okay.
What's a sales secret? A sales secret. One of your sales secrets.
The first sales secret is really the foundation of the book, and this is not rocket science. And you've heard this a lot over the last probably year or so. And we talk about mindset. Is changing your mindset from selling to helping. When you go in and to serve the client and to help the client as your mindset, not to sell them, you'll sell a lot more.
I love that because we were talking earlier how what I've sold for many, many years, I've sold many things from exhibit space to in the hotel business, banquets and weddings, 89 weddings, which is 88 too many.
Yeah.
150 concerts, which is 150 too few. But in selling, what I always learned is it has to be, the customer has to be happy and what you're delivering has to be happy because corporate sponsorship's invisible. It's a feeling.
Right.
Did this work?
Right.
I was on with a client today who sells a product, I won't mention it, but when they told me how many of this product they sold at the boat show, it was unprecedented.
Really?
Unprecedented. And I said, oh my God, were we your best show all year? And they're just really nice people.
That was tangible though for them.
Yes,
yeah,
it was tangible.
Right.
They had a product. What happens when you don't have a product?
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break and then come back to hear more sales secrets and more about your book.
Okay.
Sold on leadership at all levels. and our host, Gail Lanier-Lofson.
Well, I'm speaking today with Alan Langer, who is the author of The 7 Secrets to Selling More by Selling Less, an Amazon bestseller. Selling More by Selling Less, I highly recommend it. I actually think after perusing it, and I can't wait to dig into this, that we need to have college kids reading this. And we need a college course on sales.
You need a college course on sales. It's amazing. We were just chatting about this just while the commercial breaks. Like, sales is such a negative perception. Like, you don't you don't see kids saying, "Hey, mom and dad, I want to be a salesman when I grow up."
No,
that just doesn't happen. And there's business courses, but how many sales courses are actually out there in the college level? So I think it's a very noble, very lucrative profession if you do it right.
Yes.
The reason why sales has such a negative perception, both ways, for the customer and for the salesperson, is because it's been done wrong for so many years. The ABCs of closing, always be closing, and tin men, and all of those things, that's what people expect, and they don't want to be that person, nor does the customer want to meet with that person.
So here's one of my sales secrets that I'll tell you. Don't share it with anyone, okay? No is not next. No is not next. Because when someone says no to me, I don't want to be at a Chamber of Commerce meeting or a big national meeting and see them and like they look the other way because
right.
they're like, they don't think Gail likes them anymore.
Right.
When you say no to me, if it's a nice no, I mail you a present.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very good.
So
I like that.
Sometimes it's a copy of my book and I'll let them know it's very good for insomnia. So just pick this up. So you're welcome. You know, that's what I'll do. But that's, I just believe no is not next and don't beat yourself up. Do not beat yourself up about a no.
Yeah, and you also are bringing up a great point. I talk about the customer experience with a salesperson. You need to leave that customer with a great experience, whether they buy or not.
Yes.
See, the problem is so many salespeople, when they don't buy, they're like, okay, great, thanks for your time, and they walk out. They completely break that bridge down with the customer, and that's it. Well, what if that customer really liked you? They just wasn't the right time for them to buy. But their uncle might need windows or whatever it is. If you leave them with a great experience, even if they don't buy, actually more if they don't buy, that just pays back. That comes back to you. And I always say, leave them with a great experience no matter what. And you'll be a good salesperson.
I do one other thing. Again, don't tell anyone. I write a thank you note when they say no. And they're not stringing me along. Do you know, I probably could think of probably my whole career of sales. And I've been selling since I was 7, but that's a different story.
Right, your shells, right?
My seashell stand.
Your seashell
I differentiated.
Stand.
No lemonade stand for me. It was a seashell stand. But one of the other things is I've always, I would say 90% of the time, I get a referral.
That's great.
I get a referral.
Right.
That's
they're
not why I'm doing
that.
It.
Right.
That's absolutely not why I'm doing it. So you were working for these different companies. Mm-hmm. Now you're Anderson, Renewals by Anderson. Mm-hmm. You are happy.
Mm-hmm.
But you realize there that there needs to be some sales training.
Yes.
And I'm going to read one of the quotes from your book by Anton Chekhov. Knowledge is of no value unless you put it into practice. What spurred the book? And how did you get this accomplished while you were working?
So I'll meld two stories into one. So I know we're pressed for time. But so my sales manager back then... I walked in one day. It was a great month for me. I was closing about 70%. It was a Friday. I was off, and in most sales organizations, they have the one big sales room where they have everyone on the board. Their closing percentage, the top guy down to the bottom guy. And back then, at this point, we had about 60 sales reps. The two guys at the bottom were closing under 20%. They were both at 18%. So I walked in and I said to my boss, "Hey, I'm not doing anything today. Why don't you let me run with one of these guys? See if I can help them." And he said to me, no, leave them alone. You're going to mess them up. And I said, what? They're closing 18%. How much worse can I make them? He goes, no, I don't mean that. He goes, you're a field salesperson. You do what you do. What you do can't be taught.
Oh, boy.
And that lit a fire in me because I had this book sitting in my head and that forced me to say, you know what? What I can be taught. And that weekend, I kind of started the outline of my book. And then fast forward, that was in 2017. Fast forward to January of 2018. I finished 2017 actually in second place at Renewal for the first time in like five years.
While writing?
No, I didn't start writing
yet.
I was getting in the middle of divorce. It was just a bad year for me. I was just like a crappy year. So it's January 3rd. I live in East Greenwich, Rhode Island. I'm driving on Main Street, ready to go to the normal coffee shop I normally go to. And I look to my left, and there's this brand new coffee shop called The Nook.
Okay.
And I said, you know what? I'm going to go into The Nook.
Sounds so cozy.
It's a very cozy place. I walk in The Nook. Great vibe. Shannon, the owner, is behind the counter. And on the counter, she had this wooden box. And in the box were probably 200 to 300 of these black cards. And they had a big Q on them. And under the Q, it was a prompt question. So it was like, what was the last nice thing you did for someone? Or when was the last time you called your parents? So, you know, these prompt questions. So I ordered my coffee. I reach into the box. I pull the card out. And the card I pulled out said, what would you like your legacy to be?
Okay, you're giving me chills.
So I stole the card.
Okay. Was she okay with that?
She was okay with that. I sat at the table. They have this nice, beautiful, long table there. I called my boss. Now, back then, Anderson, we ran 3 appointments a day, 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and 6 o'clock. And I called him up and I said, are you sitting down? He said, what's the matter? I said, I'm taking every 10 o'clock appointment off for the rest of the year. I'm not running any morning appointments. He's like, what? I said, I'm writing my book.
Okay.
And he, after he told me how much money I'd be losing and all that stuff, he became very supportive.
Well, he'd be losing money too.
Yeah, the company would be losing 1/3 of what I was selling.
Right.
And every day, Monday through Friday, usually Saturday, I went in that coffee shop around 9 o'clock and I left around noon. 1 o'clock, and I wrote. And
how did you stay focused?
I loved it. I couldn't wait to get there.
Me too.
I couldn't wait to get there. I couldn't. It was never like, it was never drudgery for me. It was always like, oh my God, I can't wait to. And I spent, you know, the first month doing research and everything, because the first half of the book is about the whole sales perception in the world. And I started the book on January 3rd of 2018. I finished it on May 31st of that year, and it was published the following January of 2019.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable that you did it that fast.
And I've just, again, it became a bestseller, and that's how I started my career here, and I just love it.
And I get it, because like you, when I was little, this is something you don't know. Bruce doesn't know this either. When my mom would ask me when I was like 7, 8, 9 years old, what do you want for Christmas? I'd say a pen and paper.
No kidding.
Oh, dear me. She would get me a Barbie doll.
Yeah.
One of those little. I remember the baby doll that had the evaporated milk when you put the bottle on it and the milk went up. How things have changed. But still, a blank piece of paper. And I had asked her, Mom, does a blank piece of paper and a pencil excite you? And I think she was like, okay, who is this kid?
Yeah. Well,
my mom,
I remember one of my greatest Christmas gifts was my parents got me a Commodore 64 computer, which was like the early Apple version, and a dot matrix printer.
And you were thrilled.
I sat there and I just wrote every night. I just typed and I wrote these silly short stories and everything. It was great.
Did you have anyone who encouraged you?
My mother. Mm-hmm. My mother was my biggest fan. She always, like, I still remember the very first short story I wrote was 2 pages about, it was about dogs taking over the world.
Oh, and do you still have that?
Somewhere, I do.
You have to resurrect that for the second book.
For the second book, yeah.
It would be actually
really
cute.
She was always my biggest champion.
I'm thinking my biggest champion was Sister T, my 8th grade teacher and best friend, because I was writing heart-aching poems about just probably the angst that if kids just did this instead of looking at social media, they'd get through it.
Yeah.
And they were getting published in our Norwich Bulletin. I grew up near the Norwich, Connecticut area. And Sister T's like, but I made up a pen name, Janice Bruce Robinson. And she's like, why aren't you just letting these be published? I'm like, I don't want my parents to know I feel. And I don't want people to think I'm weird.
Yeah.
But if I wish I still had that poetry, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just like life. All right. In our limited time here, because we don't have much time left, because I could just stay with you for another hour. Okay. Another sales secret.
Present your pricing in a way. I want people need to know that pricing is psychological.
Okay.
Pricing is not done with an algorithm. It's not done with a margin calculator. It's pricing is very strategic. There's two ways to do it. You have to prepare the customer for the price first psychologically.
Yeah.
Because how often do you get to your price if you're in sales and you get sticker shock?
Okay.
More often than not. And then when they're prepared for it, how you present it is just so critically important. It's one of the biggest things that is missed in the world of sales.
So how do you prepare people when you're going to tell them your fee for speaking?
I would say basically, do you think so? It depends on what you're selling. But, you know, you want to mention, you want to anchor a price. So you want to anchor a price psychologically. Yep. And then that price usually is going to be higher than what you are going to come in from a speaking perspective. And then when you, like, say you anchor 10,000, you come in at 7,500, they're going to feel like, oh, that's a great price. You know, instead of saying, oh, God, 10,000, I've got sticker shock.
But you've also got to be proud of what you're doing and make sure that's a good price for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, as we close today, advice to your younger self, one sentence.
Get into sales earlier.
Yes, love that, love that. It sounds like you were, though. Well, I can't thank Alan Langer enough, professional speaker, author of The 7 Secrets to Selling More by Selling Less. And Bruce,
yes.
You are the salesperson. That is for sure, a great salesperson.
Well, I appreciate that.
You are humble. You look for other outlets for people to sell their wares at, like when you were doing Chowder Cookoff or Taste of Rhode Island and put products out. And you are just remarkable. Thank you for another great show.
You left out handsome.
Oh,
and one
voice.
Of the best radio voices I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it?
From you back at you. What a voice.
I know. Alan could sell his voice the way Donna Mack does.
Absolutely. I have an audiobook version, and I read.
There you go.
I read it, yes.
Excellent.
Well, thank you, Bruce. I'll see you next month.
You bet. Always, always a pleasure. Always inspiring. Leadership at All Levels with Gail Lowney, a Lawson.
Your someday is now. What are you waiting for?